This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., wealth management specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Oh, yeah. Great to have her today, especially with all of the international news with Ukraine, Hamas, etc., etc. She, of course, is the vice president of the Davis Institute for Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation and the author of the book, Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. She bleeds green. She's Philadelphia's own Dr. Victoria Coates. Hello, my friend.
Well, hi, Rich. I'm a little bit angry at you.
What'd I do now?
Well, you came to Washington and you didn't call, you didn't write, you didn't come to visit.
I didn't even know you were there.
Well, of course I'm there. I work there.
I didn't put two and two together. I'm sorry.
I was a little offended. I mean, I was happy to see the pictures, but
you have to swing
by Heritage.
You should have texted me and said, come by Heritage. In fact, I blame DeSantis. You would think he would know this, and we had plenty of time to swing by. So this is definitely on him.
Yeah, no, I blame Matt, too. And the other thing, and we'll talk about this, is we host lots of other people who need to broadcast out of our studios. So if you ever want to broadcast from Heritage, we are there for you.
Done. Love it. I'll take you up on that. Well, after I got to New York last night, Caroline Levitt texted me and said, hey, are you still in the city? Come to the White House press briefing tomorrow and take the special chair. But I was already in New York to do Fox stuff. But isn't that cool?
That would be fun. That would be super fun. Yeah.
So she said I can do that in the future. She's going to let me do that and sit in the special chair, the big kid's chair. However, she said under no circumstances can I come to the White House Easter egg roll, since I literally harassed every cabinet official on the show yesterday about it. They said enough is enough.
We're going to make that happen. I have great faith.
Some people dream of flying in Air Force One. Some people dream of going to the White House Situation Room. Anyway, I'm glad you made time for us today, because this is a busy one. Obviously, we got to talk about the president's comments on Ukraine yesterday and the media's reaction to that. I also want to talk about Hamas. It's horrific what's going on with the hostages there. Let's begin there, actually, since you are the author of the book, Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. Where do we stand right now with the release of hostages? I mean, we've seen barbaric and brutal pictures here.
Yeah, today was a rough day. We hosted an event at Heritage on Tuesday for a surviving hostage and some family members of hostages, and got their testimony. And we knew then today was going to be bad, that the Bibas family had been killed and that Ofer, who was the 86-year-old, was likely dead. We met with his grandson when we were in Tel Aviv in December. But I don't think anything prepared us for the video out of Gaza today of them parading the caskets like trophies. you know, a baby and, you know, and fierce mother. I mean, it just, it was obscene. And I think President Trump's reaction that he would like to level Gaza is pretty much every normal human's reaction. Even if you're sympathetic to the Palestinians, seeing all those people cheering in the streets, it's not normal. Something is so deeply broken and wrong. I think we need to think more about the president's plan to move those people out, put them into civilized areas. I mean, it's Belgium, it's Canada, it's Latin America, as well as countries in the Middle East, where hopefully they can find a path back to humanity, because that was bad. And then this afternoon, it's breaking that three buses, like empty buses, blew up outside of Tel Aviv because they've booby-trapped all of the public transportation in Israel. The plan was to detonate all of these things in rush hour tomorrow. And by the grace of God, I think literally a miracle, three of them went off too soon, so they're all running around trying to get the rest of the devices neutralized. But it's been a rough day.
Oh, my God. It's just horrific, horrific. What needs to happen here? I mean, that's, I think, the question that everybody's asking is, what needs to happen? You're the expert in this. You're the deputy foreign policy, deputy national security advisor to President Trump. You still have the ear of many powerful people inside the White House. I'm sure they're looking to you for guidance on these matters. What do we do here?
Well, this is really why I wrote The Battle for the Jewish State. What we need to do is be able to declare victory. I mean, and this is an area where people who sympathize with the Palestinians can see what has happened to them, particularly over the last 50 years, is the international community has strung them along that somehow this is all going to be okay and that their behavior is acceptable. I think what we need is a president who will say, no, you're going to lose. And that's why I hope President Trump was sincere when he said today he wanted to level Gaza. I think we should try to get as many hostages as we can out over the next days and prolong phase one to get them out. And then when, you know, the government of Israel concludes no one else is coming out, then the war has to start again and Hamas has to be defeated. I mean, there have to be white flags. There have to be, you know, a conclusion, a signing ceremony. Okay, then we can move on. They can move on. But we just can't perpetuate the situation. It's too gruesome and ghastly. And it's eating away at what should be one of the brightest lights in the Middle East, which is the modern state of Israel. So it is hugely in the United States' interest to get this resolved. But the problem is nobody's told the Palestinians that they lost. Mm-hmm. You know, they lost decisively in 63. It's 50 years later. It's time. Like, no more. And we're not going to indulge you in, you know, these bizarre, grotesque fantasies anymore. And so I think that is the message that has to go out.
And how do we achieve that without the United States getting dragged into a long, protracted war in the Middle East that clearly nobody has any appetite for?
Including the Israelis. I mean, what the Israelis will tell you, including the chief of staff of the IDF, who I met with this week, they don't want American boots on the ground. They want to be able to do this themselves, and they are fully capable of doing it themselves. And what they need is that visible, tangible support from the United States, because that's what brings ultimately the Arab world on board, because the Arab world needs us too. So this is what led to the Abraham Accords. If they see us standing unequivocally with Israel, they'll come around. I mean, it'll be no, 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 but eventually it'll be yes. And in this case, I think, you know, President Trump should release the additional $7 billion in munitions that the Biden administration was holding up, if he hasn't already today, and just make it very, very clear through word and deed that we are with Israel doing what Israel needs to do to get Hamas defeated. And so that is going to be a huge sea change, though, from what we've had over the last 18 months from the Biden administration preaching restraint and expressing concern for the humanitarian crisis. Well, if they can afford all those sets and all those new uniforms and all those new flags and all those production values that went on today, well, then they can afford food. And I don't have to worry so much about getting humanitarian aid into the Strip.
Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. Let's shift gears, if we could, to another protracted war that we don't want to see American boots on the ground. Of course, I'm talking about Ukraine. Now, you were quoted in this Wall Street Journal piece that was entitled today, Trump's attacks on Zelensky signals new world order taking shape. I'm not surprised the Wall Street Journal phrased it that way. And I liked your quote here, and I'll just read it for everyone. It's not that President Trump is abandoning the post-World War II order, said Victoria Coates, Vice President for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. It's that we are no longer in the post-World War II era, and we have to accept that the geopolitical landscape has shifted. So expound on that for us, if you could.
Well, and credit to Alex Ward, who's one of the reporters on that piece, who reached out to me for a quote that he used my quote without altering it, mm-hmm. I mean, which they can do. You know, as you know, when sure. you send these things in, you're right. kind of hoping for the best. And he put it first. And so, you know, I give the journal credit. The editorial page was actually much worse than the yes. reporting part of the paper in terms of condemning what Trump has done. I mean, the
same at National Review as well. Yeah, they were just burying him on it.
Yeah, they call us a moral abomination for our various heresies. So I take that as a badge of honor. But, you know, what President Zelensky has done over the last couple of days is, I mean, beyond embarrassing. And, you know, first he comes out and says he can't find half of the aid that we've given him. And then he comes out and says President Trump is living in a Russian disinformation state. I mean, and then he, you know, starts crying that Trump hits back. Mm-hmm. Of course he's going to. I mean, he's Donald Trump. I mean, have you right. watched the TV at any point over the course of the last 30 years? I mean, this is what he's going to do if you start attacking him. And he is what you want to be, your guarantee. You think Emmanuel Macron is going to guarantee your security from Russia? I mean, no, that's right. not possible. So you better be nice to the United States. And I think a lot of the blame for this goes on the Biden administration, who buttered up Zelensky for the last 3 years. We are going to have the 3-year anniversary of the invasion on Monday and start, you know, as much as it takes, as long as it takes. He comes to Washington, gets a hero's welcome, comes to Pennsylvania in September of last year for essentially a campaign shot. With Josh
signing
Shapiro.
Bombs with Governor Josh Shapiro,
yeah.
signing missiles.
And in the middle of a general election, you're doing a campaign spot for the Democrats, and then you're surprised because a Republican president wants to take a different course. Now, so, you know, what I was getting at is that in that quote is not only is this a different world than it was 80 years ago, but if you think back to the post-World War II era that they're talking about as if it's this perfect Pax Americana, how about we go back to 1966 when Charles de Gaulle pulled out of NATO's military command and asked all the American servicemen and women to leave France, at which point Dean Rusk famously responded to him, well, would that be the dead in the cemeteries of Normandy as well? You know, that wasn't right. exactly a shining moment in the history of NATO unity, and that was in 1966 as the Vietnam War was picking up and the Cold War was at its height. So, you know, I think we all survived that, and we will survive this. But Ukraine needs to figure out, you know, how it gets to yes, because we're going to need to wrap this war up. They know they have to, and President Trump is providing a path. So work with him. Don't yell at him.
It seems to me, and, you know, I'm not a foreign policy expert, but it seems like avoiding nuclear war is in our best interest here. And ever since the Cold War, we've been trying to avoid a nuclear war with the Soviet Union, Russia. We've been trying this since, you know, all these times and all the the only way I see Ukraine winning here is if the United States of America decides to put boots on the ground and Europe puts boots on the ground and we fight Russia, and then, you know, and then that's World War III. And now we're talking about multiple nuclear powers and something goes wrong and it's global nuclear annihilation. And I feel like all the people that will not accept the reality, and this is why I was very happy that the vice president today put out the comment on Twitter that he did, which I'm sure you saw, saying that, you know, we have to accept reality here. Ukraine can't win. They're acting in this universe of, if it's just, you know, just give them another $100 billion and they can win. They can't win. The only way they win is if we, the United States of America, or Europe goes in there with their boots on the ground, and it's an all-out war. And what I worry about is that leads to somebody, maybe accidentally even, launching a nuclear missile. And then it's, you know, kiss everybody goodbye. And I don't think enough people are seeing it through that lens.
No, and you know, hindsight is 2020, but I will say that in the spring of 2022, before I joined Heritage, but independently of Heritage, Congressman Chip Roy and I and the Heritage Foundation and Heritage Action all came to the same conclusion, which is, what the heck is going on here? Mm-hmm. You know, the Ukrainians had the momentum at that point. So if you say we're all in and we're going to win this thing in 3 months and, you know, just make it so difficult for Putin, he just kind of withdraws. There probably was an opportunity there if Europe had also been all in on winning. They weren't. When they created this grinding war of attrition, which, as I mentioned, is going to hit its 3-year anniversary in 3 days. And that is not a war Ukraine can win. The mm-hmm. vice president is correct. If it's fighting to the last Ukrainian, they're going to run out first. And the president's been clear he does not want that. I and all of my ghoulish friends in Washington who keep saying no Americans are being asked to die, I'm like, well, we're going to do this on the backs of hundreds of thousands of dead Ukrainians? Mm-hmm. Like, why? That's horrible. And the other thing is, Rich, China is there. China is right there in that theater, in the form of the North Korean shock troops, in the form of the so-called private sector companies, the state-owned entities that are now doing reconstruction in the eastern provinces of Ukraine, in the Chinese so-called commercial vessels that are dragging their anchors through the Baltic Sea, disrupting internet cables. They're there. So, you know, if we get more bogged down in this, and they're there at zero cost, we're there at tremendous cost, which they think is fantastic. But if we start getting engaged there, we could be in a very, very different kind of conflict than what we're anticipating. And I think President Trump wants to avoid that. He wants to get this, wrap this up, get this to a conclusion, and then deal with all the other challenges we have in front of us so that we can stand up to China from a position of strength.
I think there's a couple points there, too, Dr. Victoria Coates, to elaborate on. Number one is the idea of Trump calling Zelensky a dictator. Look, I understand, and there was a national conservative host last night who was teeing off on that statement because Ukraine's constitution allows for them to skip elections. But in this country, we had multiple wars where presidents still ran for re-election, and I understand that they allow it, but it still, to me, is offensive to me. If you're really saying this is a battle for democracy and this guy has chosen not to put himself out to the voters, and then they turn around and they say he's so incredibly popular, so then I turn back and say, well, then why didn't he just have an election and then win? You know, so the idea that this is a battle for the great democracy, number one, that frustrates me. But number two, even if it is, it's still a question of how do you win? And then the other point is, the notion, and I had a caller today who brought this up, about the United States signing a treaty to defend Ukraine. That was not a treaty. That was something Bill Clinton decided to offer, never ratified by the United States Senate. This is not a NATO country. And Europe itself does not seem to be as worried as Democrats and many Republicans are in this country that Putin's going to roll through Ukraine and into Poland and conquer Europe. Because if they were, I think they would be doing more to stop him. And they're not.
No, and there are a couple of things to unpack there. The democracy rationale has always been faulty. And the other book I once wrote a couple of years ago. It's David Sling, A History of Democracy and 10 Works of Art, which goes to my other area of expertise. But the great lesson of David Sling is democracy is a neutral. It's a form of government. It's not good or bad. It depends on the people who are exercising it. And so going to war for democracy is never going to work. That was the great failure of Afghanistan and Iraq. The cause of Belli was not the national security interests of the United States. We do not have these interests in Ukraine. And as you said, saying we're going to war, you know, we are supplying this war because we love democracy, you know, that A is an abstract to the American people. It's not going to fly over the long term. And B, you know, you've got Zelensky calling off elections over and over again. So it's hardly a shining example of democracy. So, you know, the president, you know, used harsh rhetoric. I mean, I'm sorry. Is everyone shocked that President Trump said something a little extreme? But what
he did call him a moderately successful comedian. I mean, there's many comedians that would love to be called that. I'm just saying.
Moderately successful. Well, in a way, I think we are watching the Trump Zelensky show here. but I think what we're seeing is him saying something extreme. Everybody runs and jumps at the extreme thing, and then suddenly the conversation catches up. That yes, we have a problem here.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to deal with it. So you know, this is not the end of Western civilization as we know it. And the other fact of the matter is that the European countries that are on the front lines, the Baltics, Poland, whatnot, they're all at 3.5% and declaring they're getting to 5% of GDP for defense. The problem is there aren't enough of them. And, you know, the ugly math is the plans that NATO approved at the last summit, last July, actually in Vilnius, to counter Russia require all NATO members to be at 3.5. The ones on the front lines very quickly got to 3.5 and are looking at 5. The ones that aren't, and that includes France and Germany and Italy and Canada, they're not at 3.5. And so the big economies are not there. We are, but I mean, the other big economies aren't there to supply these war plans. You're 100% correct. They have no urgency to deal with this. You know, they're calling emergency summits because they're mad they didn't get invited to Riyadh. So they're perfectly capable of having diplomatic meetings, but they're not capable, apparently, of actually putting their money where their mouths are.
Well, see, that's the other problem. And Europe understands probably better than anybody what it's like for a tyrannical madman to roll through their continent and take over. And they don't seem to be that worried about it. So that's why this talking point infuriates me, because and also, they're not kids over there. It's like we're viewing this from the lens of the United States as the adult in the room. And yet we're always told by the left we can't be the imperialists telling everybody what to do. But we're acting as if Europe can't get at the table and figure this out on their own. They need the United States to set up the meeting and arrange the catering and the, you know, and the snacks. It's like, you know, you guys can figure this out. And I think that was the point that Mike Waltz was making today. So at the White House press briefing, which I'm sure you watched, and the National Security Advisor Mike Waltz was speaking about this point. And what was his the main crux of his argument about the upcoming NATO summit and what that's going to yield?
Well, what I understand it to be is that they want to see very concrete commitments out of Europe for for their defenses. And Mike Waltz is a very serious person. He's obviously served as a Green Beret. He served in Congress, and he's putting together a really nice staff on the NSC. And what he wants to see is Europe take on Europe's defenses. And this is where I think we have Macron, you know, in particular. I'm sorry to pick on you, Emmanuel, but I mean, you've had 3 years to do anything constructive on this file. And suddenly you're having an emergency meeting this week. Where was that meeting 3 years ago?
Right.
And it's, it's mind-boggling.
And also, I mean, not to just, I'm sorry to interrupt, Dr. Coates, but I thought also when Biden said that we're not going to send tanks because that's World War III, we're not going to send planes because it's World War III, and we're not going to do all these things because it's World War III. I mean, if there was an opportunity at some point to do something, that window closed 3 years ago. And it's just, it's frustrating now to listen to these people act like they could have, you know, only now we have the opportunity to do something when they had the opportunity to do something and they didn't all those years ago.
No, and all of the so-called Republicans who are yelling at us now all gave full-throated support to Biden in this, as mm-hmm. he was failing to articulate any kind of strategy, as he was failing to effectively help the Ukrainians win when there may have been a window. It's just mind-boggling to me that these people still get inches of column space and a megaphone to lambast President Trump, who's been in office for all of 30 days, and suddenly he's the one who's losing the Ukraine war. You know, it's
and selling out ridiculous. To Russia, and selling out to Putin, right. and selling out democracy, and appeasement, and all the other things that have been said in the last 24 hours.
Right. Yeah. How many times did Donald Trump visit Moscow while he was not in office?
Mm-hmm. Zero.
Zero.
Right. Yeah.
And so if he was such a Putin puppet, why wasn't he going to visit Putin? Lots of other mm-hmm. people go to Moscow. It's a fantasy.
Well, that's the other problem that I have with this argument is that for the 4 years Trump was there, Putin didn't invade Ukraine. Yet there was the
shocking,
whole Crimea thing when Obama was there. And then there was the whole thing of them invading Ukraine when Biden was there. So why didn't you do it while your puppet was in the White House?
That, you know, is the other sort of inconvenient truth for all these people. And I thought Senator Cruz made a good point on Hannity last night when he was talking about the fact that Joe Biden went up to the Senate in January of 2022 and lobbied against Nord Stream 2 sanctions mm-hmm. that Cruz was the author of and wanted to impose. And you had the president of the United States go and lobby for Putin, saying they have to have this gas, you have to leave these pipelines open and not just produce more American gas and ship it to the Europeans, which is subsequently what we were able to do. But you know, that is what created this war, not anything Donald Trump did. And you know, what he's trying to do now is end it. And it is mind-boggling to me that more establishment Republicans don't see that as a positive thing.
Well, and I think that if Biden had won re-election, nothing would change. The money would just keep flowing to Ukraine, and mm-hmm. that would be fine for a lot of people because it would be flowing to our military-industrial complex, and then those products that they make would ship over to Ukraine, and everybody would just be fine with that status quo, and that would continue for four more years, and that's the bottom line. And when I had Brian Hughes on yesterday, who's the Deputy National Security Advisor, who I believe maybe have taken over your old spot, and he was saying, you know, it's trench warfare over there. I mean, the pictures that we mm-hmm. don't see in this country, it looks like something out of World War I, and there's absolute devastation. We don't see any of that. We just see pictures of Zelensky in his sweater coming over here and hanging out. Like, and that's another part of this propaganda war that frustrates me, is that this is a really brutal conflict that has to end. And if it either ends, as I see it, and again, I'm not an expert in this, but it's either A, it ends because we all go in there and we all help them and we fight and we kick ass and it's World War III, or it ends by some solution that doesn't make everybody happy, but it ends. I'd rather go with option B. I'm sorry, but it just seems like the odds of us not blowing up are better with option B.
I know, I like option B too, because we have a lot of other issues here at home, and not to open another can of worms, but I mean, obviously the president is dealing with a southern border crisis and the fact that we have a threat to our homeland that we haven't had since 1812. I mean, we've got China here as well. We've got God only knows what that has, crept across the, not even crept, marched, walked, waltzed, danced across the southern border for the last 4 years. That is now here in our country. This is what Chris Wray used to call, you know, the flashing red lights he saw everywhere. That, you know, that is here. They have to deal with that. We have a direct threat to the homeland. The president's talking about, you know, an Iron Dome for the entire United United States because of threats we see. And, you know, Brian is actually in STRATCOM, in strategic communications. But yes, he's 100% correct. This situation is grim and growing grimmer, and it's winter. And we think the polar vortex, which I firmly oppose, is bad here. You know, it's much worse in Ukraine. So, you know, this is just not a situation that's going to improve. And we have, you know, so many other things we have to deal with. Is this the best use of our time and money? I just don't think so right now.
Did you just say you oppose the polar vortex?
Yes, I hate it.
All right, I got to let you run, my friend, but I appreciate it. But real fast, your thoughts. Can we do a repeat next year? I absolutely believe we can.
A repeat?
Of the Super Bowl.
In terms of, oh, my gosh, of course.
Right? I really think so. This is a good team.
Way. Although there is one, I have a conspiracy theory for you.
Go ahead.
So, like I'm sure all of your listeners, I was bombarded by advertisements for Super Bowl gear. I have yet to get my first piece. The first piece is going to be delivered next week from Fanatics. They made everything in Chiefs gear. They didn't make any Eagles gear.
Interesting.
And
interesting.
I bet if you hunt around developing countries in next year, you're going to see a lot of Super Bowl Chiefs gear.
Yes.
That's shipped off for charity.
That should be your next book.
Sir.
Battle for the Chiefs gear.
Anyway,
hunt for the Chiefs gear in the filthy world.
That's my conspiracy theory for the week that I'm sharing with you.
I love it. I love it. Well, as always, please get the book, Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win, with a foreword by Senator Ted Cruz. Dr. Victoria Coates, our friend from the Heritage Foundation, Vice President of the Davis Institute for Foreign Policy and National Security, thank you so much for joining us here on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Have a great weekend.
Thank
it's
you.
The 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zeoli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
I love a good conspiracy theory from my buddy Dr. Coates, right? And I agree, I'm also anti-polar vortex. I just love how she slipped that in there, the polar vortex, which I absolutely oppose. Okay, so this is our happy hour. I'm very happy about the fact that, I'm in New York today. I got to do America's Newsroom. I was at the White House yesterday, and I'm very happy that this polar vortex will eventually end, and it'll be summer. And then you should make your plans to stay at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, because it's beautiful there, and you will love it there. And you should definitely 100% think about making your summer plans now at my happy place, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Do it now while the best rooms are still available. And don't wait. The other thing I want to mention, too, is that our friends at Emmons Roofing and Siding do a fantastic job. They really do. They will take great care of your home every step of the way. And it's not just a matter of the work being done by Emmons that is exceeding expectations. It's the fact that they are so trustworthy every step of the way. And that matters in this day and age. It really does. They will make sure the job is done right. Matt and Stephanie, the owners, are dedicated to that. They serve our whole region, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. So just reach out to EmmonsRoofing.com today. Your home will not only look better from the curb, more curb appeal, but it'll be a bit more insulated. It'll look great and feel great, too. The roof, you'll get a 30-year warranty on that roof. I mean, 30-year, lifetime warranty on that roof, lifetime warranty, and a 10% inflation relief discount for each and every one of my listeners. That's 10% off on the roof, windows, doors, siding, you name it. Emmons even has a bathroom remodeling division. You should check out Emmons Roofing today. They did a great job remodeling the bathroom in our old home. My wife loved it, and you know the saying, happy wife, happy life. So definitely, definitely reach out to Emmons today, EmmonsRoofing.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, Justin, if tomorrow this gets taken down on YouTube because it's AC/DC, we'll know why.
We've been good with... There's like one or two trigger songs with AC/DC, but the other ones have been like, we've played Dirty Deeds a couple of times and it's been fine.
All right,
so
cool.
I think we should be fine.
You've been doing an excellent job with the music lately, Justin.
Thank you.
Outstanding. Gotten a lot of compliments on that. DeSantis as useless as ever. I mean, honestly, the fact that we were in D.C., we were right by the Heritage Foundation, and you didn't even think to have us go over there and say hello to our friends at the Heritage Foundation is inexcusable.
All right. In my defense, though, the thought had crossed my mind, but in my defense, Dr. Coates travels a lot for her job. And I thought, what are the odds?
And the text message to her may not reach her because she's where, on Saturn? Are you in town? Rich and I would love to come by and say hi so that she doesn't guilt me about it on the show the next day. That text, what, if she was in China, she wouldn't get it or something?
Was there an oversight? Yes. I had a lot going on. There was a lot to think of, and that wasn't, like, my top priority. I should have...
Oh, you heard it, Dr. Coates. He said it, not me. No. Would have been my top priority.
My top priority isn't to bother Dr. Coates to see if we can swing by and waste some of her time. She's very generous. She carves out 30 minutes per week to do our show. I don't want to ask for any additional favors. So,
well,
anyway, next time we're there, I'll be sure to shoot her a message. Because we do
battling the World
Coates.
War III rooting neocons is not easy, and we need all the friends we can get to make sure that we dominate in here. So, we got it. It's like Wonder Twin powers activate. I need to go and give her the fist bump, Wonder Twin powers activate form of.
I don't think she wants to bump fists.
Don't you remember the Wonder Twins from the Justice League, cartoon?
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, you two forget it. You know what? You two forget it. You're too friggin' young.
I know about the Wonder Twins.
Thank you, Justin. You know, the problem is it's not a you thing. It's DeSantis has no idea of culture. No, does nothing other than listen to boring podcasts. You know what he told me yesterday? This is amazing.
Oh, geez.
We're trying to figure out where to go to dinner in D.C. the other night, right? So we're driving to D.C. and we want a burger. And he says to me, and this is something you only hear from Matt DeSantis, okay? Wait for this. He goes, I'm not even making this up. He goes, Malcolm Gladwell did an entire hour podcast. Wait for it here. Stick with me. Malcolm Gladwell did an entire hour-long podcast on beef tallow and why fries fried in beef tallow taste so good. That was an actual quote from Matt DeSantis on our way to trying to find. I'm like, only you would say this as we're trying to find a freaking burger place on the way to D.C.
All right, two things. One, I thought it was interesting. And two, I was malnourished. I was delirious because you picked a place that didn't even exist. We drove like 15 minutes out of the way to go to this smash burger place that didn't even exist. It wasn't closed. It just wasn't there. It was just an empty plot of land.
I mean, I could understand a 5-minute podcast on beef tallow fries.
An hour
on why fries and beef tallow taste so much better sounds to me like 55 minutes of wasted airtime. As a man who tries to fit it all in a 4-hour show and has to judge, I feel like that could have been a 5-minute segment.
Well,
here's my review of beef tallow fries. They taste better, and they're better for you too. Okay, now moving on. Like, that should have been the whole scene. And how you listen to that for an hour is beyond me.
It was
beyond me.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I thought I was doing you a favor, recommending a podcast you could listen to while you were on the train from D.C. to New York. But instead, I just get mocked.
Yeah. No, listen, even though the train was stuck for 2 hours between Washington and Baltimore, I still didn't listen to that podcast. I'd rather sit in silence. That's more interesting to me. Beef tallow, an hour on beef tallow fries.
You like Malcolm Gladwell, don't you?
Yeah, for a freaking hour on French fry oil. Think about it. That's what the podcast is about. I get it. Beef tallow is better for you. Seed oils are bad. I got it. That's 90 seconds. Move on.
Healthier and tastier.
You could say that. You just said it in 12 seconds. That's my point. You don't need an hour.
I'm not as articulate as Malcolm Gladwell.
Oh, my gosh. And only you would come out with that statement. That's the thing. That's such a DeSantis thing. unbelievable. So, wait, Elon's speaking right now at CPAC?
Yeah, I think Kirk has it. We could probably throw it to it.
But
right now.
I did want to mention, Kash Patel just put out a tweet, in his first tweet as FBI director. I just wanted to share this from his new Twitter account, or X account, at FBI Director Kash. I am honored to be confirmed as the 9th director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Thank you to President Trump and Attorney General Bondi for your unwavering confidence and support. The FBI is a storied legacy, from the G-men to safeguarding our nation in the wake of 9/11. The American people deserve an FBI that is transparent, accountable, and committed to justice. The politicization of our justice system has eroded public trust, but that ends today. My mission as director is clear. Let good cops be cops and rebuild trust in the FBI. Working alongside the dedicated men and women of the Bureau and our partners, we will rebuild the FBI the American people can be proud of. And to those who seek to harm Americans, consider this your warning. We will hunt you down in every corner of this planet. Mission first, America always. Let's get to work. I think it's excellent. Particularly, of course, the point about the weaponization against the American people, that ends today. I love that. I really do. The politicization of our justice system has eroded public trust, but that ends today. I think back to what I think was one of the most seminal moments, honestly, in recent American history. Was the day that Merrick Garland, the attorney general, put up that letter to moms in yoga pants at school board meetings saying, hey, the FBI might be watching you. You might be a domestic violent extremist for speaking out at school board meetings. I think that was a seminal turning point, and why a lot of suburban moms may have held their nose and voted for Donald Trump, but still voted for Donald Trump. That and the MAHA issue, the Make America Healthy Again issue, which, speaking of seed oils, you're about to hear a lot about. In all seriousness, as much as I mock DeSantis, seed oils are very bad for you. This has been a crux of what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has said. There are vegetarian options that do not involve seed oil, by the way. The problem is heat point and temperature. And I sound like Malcolm Gladwell, but the bottom line is this. Seed oils are about to become a big thing, as are school lunches, as are other things, including today. President Trump has decided to do with naming RFK Jr. to look into damage done by mRNA vaccines, something that the vice president spoke about with Joe Rogan on his podcast recently, and the harms of those that happened. All that's going to come up as well. So that is very, very interesting to me. Javier Milei literally gave Elon Musk a chainsaw today. So Javier Milei is the Donald Trump of Argentina. And what I love about him is that he just went in there and just decided that this was a country that had, it was socialist, and they were, I mean, beyond a point of debt and financial insolvency that you would think you can't ever recover from. Since Javier Milei's reforms, Argentina now has a surplus. And the people of Argentina got money back from the government, much like what President Trump has said he wants to do with Doge. Every American can get $5,000, a 20% give back to the American people. So I was asked about that today in America's Newsroom with Dana Perino and Bill Hemmer. I only had like 45 seconds because J.D. Vance was speaking at CPAC and they cut into it. So in hindsight, I kind of wonder if I should have done the White House press briefing instead. But that's okay. Caroline Levitt said, I will absolutely be there in the future. So I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about it. But I'm not bringing DeSantis with me because I don't want to listen to his boring podcast ideas on the way down to D.C. So you just stay where you are. But the thing about it, though, is that Javier Milei's efforts there, it's a miracle. It really is. But putting in very libertarian economic policies by slashing government. And this is what the key to DOGE is. It's not just simply a matter of tracking down waste, fraud, and abuse. And it's also an understanding of a key principle mind shift, which I want to talk about in the next hour in more detail. But it's a concept of this is not our money, as in the government. This is not our money. From the government's perspective, I mean. Because the money is the American people's money. The government doesn't make money. The only money they have is the money we give them. This is our money. And if we can return that money to the American people and we can pay off some of our debt at the same time so that we can reduce the interest on that debt, which will then help us, as our buddy Kevin Hassett put it today, you're talking about a 40 basis points reduction. If you can start paying down that deficit, that's going to lead to lower interest rates. That's going to boost the economy. Then you give Americans money to go out and spend by just simply cutting government and cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. But it is a mindset of saying this money does not belong to the government. This money belongs to the American people. And that is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com, with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. And I just want to, I'm going to get into a little bit more of what J.D. Vance said in the next hour, too. But just on that point of what he said at CPAC today, what the goal here is for the American economy, what the goal is. We're $36 trillion in debt. We have a $2 trillion deficit. So 20% of DOGE, this was a question that Peter Doocy asked today at the White House press briefing, which I was invited to, by the way. Did I mention that? I think I did. So Peter Doocy asked this question. He says, all right, so 20% goes back to the American people. 20% goes to the deficit, to cut the deficit. Or the national debt, excuse me. Where does the other 60% go? And the answer that was given by Hassett and Stephen Miller is it goes to forward pay for the government budget, which will then reduce the deficit, which again then acts in another cycle here to help reduce interest, which helps reduce payments, which then can lower interest rates to generate the economy. And I think a key thing that they emphasized today was no cuts to Social Security and Medicare for people who have lawfully, legally paid into the system, but we are going to track down that abuse and that fraud because I think that's key to maintaining consumer confidence. But here's what J.D. Vance said today at CPAC when it comes to the key to young people. This is cut number 8 here, his message to young people, what they hope for the future, for my kids, your grandkids, cut 8.
I guess my message to young people generally is we're trying to make your life better. And that is the simple thrust of President Trump's policy is we want you to be able to buy a home. We want you to be able to work a good job. We want you to be able to raise your kids, like I said, according to the values that you believe in. And we want you to be able to build a nice life in this country that all of us love. That is what we're trying to do. And, you know, you guys more than anybody, more than me, I'm talking about people under the age of 30 in particular, you guys are going to have to deal with the consequences of good policy or of bad policy for much longer than the rest of us.
This is what has to happen if we're going to get everything back on track. Here's National Council Economic Director Kevin Hassett. We did a great interview with him yesterday. If you missed it, go back and listen to the podcast from my historic day at the White House, harassing cabinet officials for an invitation to the White House Easter egg roll. Here's Kevin Hassett today talking about all this. Cut number 3.
First thing is that the president has told us to prioritize fighting inflation. And he had to do that because, as you know, President Biden let inflation get completely out of control. And he did it with policies that made no sense. They made no sense. You know, a lot of times people say to us, our friends the journalists, you know, why are you doing that? But you know, I like to think, why did they do that? Why did they spend so much money? And then why did the Fed print so much money so that we had inflation as high as we've ever seen since Jimmy Carter? So why did they do that? So we're addressing inflation. We didn't have to address it in the first term because it was always in the ones, almost always. But we're going to get it back there. And how are we doing it? Well, we're doing it with a plan that President Trump and I and others have talked about in the Oval that involves like every level of fighting inflation. First, the macroeconomic level. We're cutting spending. We're cutting spending in negotiations with people on the Hill. We're cutting spending with the advice of our IT consultant, Elon Musk. And then we're also looking into supply-side things, like restoring Trump's tax cuts, maybe even expensing new factories so that there's an explosion of supply. If you have an explosion of supply and a reduction in government demand, then inflation goes way down. And then one of the things that you want to say is, well, when are you going to see it? Well, the first thing that you'll see when the markets believe that we're going to get inflation under control is that the 10-year Treasury rate goes down, because that's how they think about future expected inflation. And so we're still going to see some memory of Biden's inflation. It's not going to go away in a month. But the 10-year Treasury, before the last Consumer Price Index, had dropped about 40 basis points. 40 basis points because markets were optimistic about our ability to fight inflation. 40 basis points is kind of not a...
That's a big deal. It's a big deal because it's all about confidence, consumer confidence, which is key. Now, look, I just real quick, Representative Jasmine Crockett, who for years wanted reparations. She's against the Doge dividend. The idea of 20% going back to the American people. You get a $5,000 check. This lunatic who wants reparations doesn't think that money's going to really do much to help you. So she's against it. This is what I mean. The Democrats, if Trump's for it, they're against it. Who could be against? It's our money. Give me back my money. It's my money, not your money. Cut number six.
Now, President Trump says he likes the idea of giving some of the savings from Doge back to Americans as kind of a dividend. Would you support that?
Listen, he's just telling a lie. He's not the one that had anything to do with the $1,200 refunds that people had during the midst of COVID that was done by Democratic House and Democratic Senate. Right now, what they're going to do is say, hey, we want to give you a refund, but Congress won't let us, because they already know that there's just no money for that. The only reason that those refunds came before was because we were living in different times. This was a time in which hopefully we won't ever go through again. We had a once in a lifetime pandemic. The bad part is that I don't know if it's once in a lifetime, because we know that Ebola, unfortunately, was detected right here in New York here recently. And if we continue down this road of getting rid of scientists or deciding that we don't want to rely on experts as it relates to what they're telling us to do, or we don't want to deal with vaccines and medicine in this country, then we may be facing not only our next pandemic, but our next 2, 3, or 4 pandemics because of their incompetence. So, no, we are not in the business of giving out money. And I don't know what.
Why would we give you money? Why would we give you your money? And honestly, I don't know what $5,000 can do for you. I can think of a lot of things I could do with $5,000, by the way. How about you? All right, listen, big story is brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariA, our fourth and final hour. Straight ahead, don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.